You've just tuned into The Blitz, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan podcast presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. Real Steelers talk for hardcore fans. All right, Steeler Nation, thanks for tuning in to The Blitz. My name is Matt. That is Mark. What is going on, dude?
Oh, you know, it's just the pre-Christmas blahs here. We've already got, you know, 8-9 inches of snow on the ground, which we're not used to as of the last decade or two. But, you know, you throw in the blahs of the Steeler season, and it's just been kind of a crappy few weeks. Let's put it that way.
Yep, in central PA, it has been snowing here three times in the last week or so. So we've gotten more snow before Christmas than we have in probably the last time I can remember. So I guess the Farmer's Almanac said it was supposed to be a crazy winter. So far, I think they're pretty much right on, at least in this part of the country.
Now, are you a Farmer's Almanac person? You kind of believe in what the farmer says there?
Everybody in Pennsylvania or Pennsyltucky or whatever you want to say believes in the Farmer's Almanac. You can find them at any drugstore, grocery store, anywhere you go, there's a Farmer's Almanac. And, yep, people will live and die by it, especially by the old school people. Absolutely.
There's no question. They're pretty popular here as well, and they're always fun to look at in the aisles and such. And, yeah, you know, it's kind of what they said about here, kind of snowy. And then after the holidays, it's supposed to get even snowier and colder. But we've already had some cold weather. So, oh, well, I guess we've done our weather report for today.
Yep, pretty much. And since the weathermen are always wrong anyway, I'm not going to dwell on it. So, in any event, talking about our Steelers and the dismal season that continues, even with the win over the Bengals last week, 30-20. Of course, at Heinz Field, the second-to-last home game, the Bengals came in to town. Obviously, the leaders of the AFC North and going to win the AFC North when it's all said and done at this point. But regardless, you know, as we said, the Steelers are 6-8 now. They're 3-2 in the AFC North. Well, while we are not mathematically out of it, there's so much that has to happen. We might as well be out of it. I mean, obviously, the Steelers have to win their last two games. Ravens have to lose. I think the Jets have to win, too. Miami has to lose. And then I think Santa has to come a day early when it's snowing and it's above 70 degrees. And then we might get in.
Yeah. And you got to spread some twinkle dust around, too. That loss for Cincinnati was actually pretty huge when you roll it in with Baltimore's win, once again, winning on field goals.
Exactly.
But they, if Baltimore loses this week, or excuse me, if Cincinnati loses this week, and then they host Baltimore in the season finale, and if Baltimore wins their last two, Cincinnati loses their last two, Baltimore actually wins the division. And it's just amazing. They've gotten hot. You got to give them credit. They're playing just good enough defense. Their offense really isn't that great, but they're just doing enough to get by. And they've won four in a row. And you know, you look at the games that the Steelers have lost, and it's just another one of those seasons where we are kicking ourselves over the opening day loss. You know, you got a Tennessee team that's now 5-9, an opening team that I think is 4-10, 5-9. I mean, just horrendous losses that should have never, ever happened. And this is where we find ourselves.
Yeah, pretty much. And you're exactly right. I mean, I say the Bengals are going to win the AFC North because I think they eventually will. Mm-hmm. I don't see them losing the last two. I think they came into a buzzsaw into Pittsburgh, honestly. I mean, you know, the Steelers don't normally score 21 points in the first quarter. I mean, let's be honest here. So, you know, the Steelers, and they call it playing for pride or playing because we're still alive or trying to prove a point or whatever you want to say. They came into Pittsburgh, you know, it was prime time. The Steelers wanted to make a point. They made it. They ended up winning the game, even though the Bengals scored some points in garbage time. You know, enough damage was done early on. Perhaps this was enough to give the Bengals a wake-up call to realize it's not over yet. I don't really know. But in any event, I still think they're going to end up winning it. But you are exactly right. It's not sewn up by any means yet. But I would be shocked if they dropped their last two, just because I think they have enough good players right now. And I think this might have just been a situation where it's an AFC North game and they just walked into Heinz Field at the wrong time. It happens in the AFC North, happens in every division. So, in any event, I don't care who wins it because it isn't going to be us, and they all suck anyway.
Right.
So, But yeah, I think overall, I mean, the Steelers, of course, still in it, but I like the way that they came out in this game. You know, regardless of the fact of what's at stake record-wise, I guess is what I like to call it, even if they're still in it. But I love the way they started out, firing down the field. 21 points in the fourth quarter. In the first quarter, Ben ends up 20 of 25, only 191 yards and one touchdown and one interception. But I mean, he was efficient. You know, they were all around. He was spreading the ball around to five different receivers. Bell was leading the ground game with 57 yards. Dwyer had 26. Felix had 22. So I think overall, it wasn't a stellar offensive night because, you know, they didn't end up scoring a lot of field goals afterwards. But they did enough to hold off the Bengals, and I think they showed that, you know, while they are the oldest defense in the league and they've got some issues that they need to take care of, which we'll get into in a bit, they still have enough forces to, to put some points up on the board when they have to.
You know, I really think this game was a game where Mike Tomlin went into that locker room after that Dolphins loss and said, you know, guys, it's a long shot, but we got to win. And secondly, and maybe even more importantly, I think, you know, he's probably laid out something along the lines of, this is the Cincinnati Bengals. This is a team who has beaten us here previously on our own field. They feel like they are one of the top teams, if not the top team, in the AFC North. I think it's about going out and showing them that the Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to go quietly, even though we're in some down years right now. And that was the feeling I got. I don't know if that happened. I don't have a fly on the wall in the locker room or the coach's office. That just felt like it to me. I saw a little more emotion out of guys, a little more emotion out of guys that you don't normally see it out of. It just looked to me like a team that didn't want to go with its tail between the legs. And again, that's just my thought. But, moving forward, you were right about the 21 points. I mean, things could not have gone better for him. I mean, the snap to the punter moved about 4 yards. I mean, it looked like one of my golf shots. Right off the tee, it's immediately slicing or hooking. And, and they punched it in, and there's a one-yard drive. And then, of course, they got the punt return from Brown. And, things just happened right. But, you know, if you don't prepare properly, then things aren't going to happen. And they obviously were. And Dalton continues to me to be kind of one of these guys that he just struggles too much for me to say that he's a top-line NFL quarterback. And I'm not saying elite. I'm just saying top-line, maybe top-10 guy. I don't think he's close to that right now. He's just too darn inaccurate with some really basic NFL throws. And you can say what you want about the wind and the cold and everything else. Until he proves he can win games on the road, big games on the road, they're not going to go anywhere, whether in the playoffs or not.
Well, you're exactly right. And I think, you know, it's the same thing that they ran into last year and the year before. You know, you're making the playoffs, and then you go in the first round and you get ousted. And, you know, I think, obviously, the Bengals are no longer the Bungles in terms of a record. But, but you're right. I mean, I don't see Dalton as anywhere near being elite in any sense of the word. He struggles with pressure on his face. He can't make the big-time throw in the clutch. He didn't seem to handle the pressure well at all in the first half. I don't think the Bengals are going to do anything in the playoffs regardless of what seed they're in. I think they have some holes on defense, on injuries, their offensive line. They're heading in the right direction, but I hardly call them elite yet. And I think you hit it right on. I was the same way in thinking along the lines that you were, and that this was a suck it up. This is a pride thing. This is the Steelers. We're not going to go away quietly. You know, we may have dug ourselves a hole we can't get out of. But, you know, we're going to play a spoiler role. We're going to play for pride. Whatever you want to say, I think they just went in there with emotion that we've only seen a handful of times this year. You know, I mean, I can probably count on one hand, literally, maybe even a couple of fingers that I've seen them play with that kind of emotion going into a game. And, you know, I look back at that first season in September, or, you know, the first four games in September, and I'm thinking, if we could have just split that and went 2-2, I mean, think of the position we're in right now. You know, we would be one game behind Cincinnati. Well, going into that, I mean, you just it boggles my mind that we were just that bad in September, and by the time we started turning it around, it was pretty much too late. I mean, you realize if you start out 0-4, you're just really not going to do anything unless you rattle off, you know, 12 straight wins.
Yeah, you need a big-time winning streak in there, and they tried to get something going, but it just consistency just wasn't there. This might pain me to say here, and again, we still haven't played the last two games, so we're real not sure yet, but I get the feeling that this offense feels pretty darn good about itself, and I think there's a sense that they are very excited about getting to next year, knowing that the chances of doing anything this year are pretty slim. Now, with that said, I still think there's some pieces that are missing. I think there's going to be, I think Emmanuel Sanders is going to go elsewhere in agency. And of course, it leads me to the other big point, am I praising Todd Haley? Well, a little. But I think what this has been the growth of Ben Roethlisberger in that no huddle. He gets rid of the ball a little bit quicker. He's allowed to have a little more autonomy at the line of scrimmage, which he's never had before, well, at least under Haley. And you just wonder if that's not part of it, too. Did they just not come out prepared and ready to go, thinking, we're doing some great things on offense, and I wrote an article a couple weeks ago. Is this offensive spurt now? Is this in a way saving Haley's job? And because I think if you go back 6 weeks ago, he probably was going to get fired. Now I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's back, and I think the offense might be okay with that based on the way they're playing right now.
Well, yeah, and I mean you got to think that. You're totally right in that. If the offense had not been putting up the type of numbers that they were these last couple of weeks, and obviously going into this game, Haley's going to be gone. You'd almost have to think that. And you and I were preaching that all year long, but maybe it did just take these guys a year and a half or so to actually get it together and realize what's going on with this offense. I mean, I like where they're going with it. I think it's got some high power potential. I mean, obviously Heath Miller is reliable. Antonio Brown is just a beast. Le'Veon Bell is starting to come into his own. But there's going to be a lot of rebuilding going into next year, and I think this could be a real big upheaval of an off season. I mean, not to look too far ahead because we have months and months to do that after the season's over. But I think you're right. These guys like where they're going, and I tell you, the offensive line, for as banged up as they are, down to the third string center, guys going out every week and shuffling around, and Guy Wimper coming in more often than anybody would like. I mean, I got to give these guys credit for sticking together and just blocking their asses off as best that they can. DeCastro is starting to come along and really come into his own. Foster's pretty reliable like he always is. But with the guys shoveling, positions back and forth every week, I mean, I got to give credit to the offensive line this year, if nothing else, because they started out sucking like we know they did, but they pulled it together this last month.
They really have, and Jack Bignell Jr. is the offensive line coach, and I know, they wanted to do more of this zone blocking stuff, and when Pouncey was hurt in game one, that kind of took that away, but I don't know offhand how many teams of the 32 teams in the NFL are down to their third center. I'm assuming a couple might be, but really, Wallace, he's not playing bad. I mean, at the absolute worst, he stalemates the guy across from him, and he went up against a really tough guy in Pecco last week. So, he's hanging in there. He's doing a good job, and I think the thing with Haley, too, is he seems to be getting what I think a lot of us have been saying, and I'm not tooting our horn or anything, but he likes these multiple tight end sets and looking like run, but they go pass. And, well, that's nice and everything, but you don't have your athletes out there. Get some of these guys off the field. Get the Wheatons and the Cotcheries back on the field. And I think he's starting to do that, and his play calling still drives me nuts, but, that's probably going to be true of anybody for me. But it's been this real gradual, almost like a time lapse of a flower kind of blossoming a little bit, the way this offense has kind of come through and gained some life recently.
Yeah, and I tell you, there's been some guys on defense that have stepped up this year. I have eaten enough crow over the last few weeks with Jason Worlds to admit that the guy is playing his ass off this year. I mean, he's playing for a contract, obviously, which leads me to my next point of guys that are stepping up. Well, and also, actually, before I get to that, dude, Al Woods, what a beast that guy is. I mean, did you see him last couple of weeks walk two or three blockers straight back into the quarterback's lap?
Man, he's got
I mean, just incredible.
Great center of gravity, and he – I'm not going to compare him to Casey because that's not what I mean here. But he's got that center of gravity that allows him to use his hips and his legs, and then he's got the big arms that allow the stability and the consistency with what he's trying to do. You know, that's part of the problem with a guy like McClendon, I think, in that position. I think he's done okay before his injury. But, you know, he's so tall that I think he loses a little bit of that leverage sometimes with these guys that you can't get up under him the way that a Hampton and certainly now Al Woods, like you're talking about. Yeah, man, he's been impressive.
I tell you, you're exactly right. And, you know, I think, I mean, this brings me to my next point that I was going to go with is I was talking to somebody on Twitter this week, and there's a lot of people that could be gone next year on defense. I mean, if the Steelers really want to start a youth movement and completely rebuild, which I'm not convinced they would ever actually go into complete rebuilding mode, but, I mean, you're talking potentially guys like Ryan Clark, Ike Taylor, you know, the Beard, Brett Kiesel. I mean, all these guys could be gone next year. And, you know, it's going to require a lot of, obviously, you know, young guys stepping up like Al Woods. But, you know, what if Hood goes away next year and then they move McClendon out to his spot and then keep Al Woods in those two?
Well,
is that like a far-fetched, you know, thing to consider?
No, not at all, because I think McClendon has played some end. And I think that seems to be a logical move. You know, go back to Clark for a minute and Kiesel, they're both free agents. I would put them coming back, the chances of are maybe 10%. I mean, Clark's game has diminished tremendously in the last calendar year. Kiesel's battling injuries again, really, for about the third straight year. I think both guys are gone. Look, they were both great guys, good Steelers. I mean, you know, Clark obviously drives a lot of us nuts with off-field stuff, but Kiesel's been the consummate Steeler. And you know, but I think Al Woods could play the nose, and you could slide McClendon out. And I think that leads us to the next thing: is what do you do with outside linebacker? I mean, the Steelers are looking at if they cut Lamar Woodley, they will lose about I shouldn't say lose. They'll have an issue of about $14 million on their cap, which is about 1/10 of the cap for a guy that won't even be on the roster. And if they wait till June 1st, that number drops to like $7 or $8 million, but then they've got to cover it over 2 years. And let's face it, is anybody really going to want to trade for Lamar Woodley with the injury history and the huge contract? This is just a bad contract, and it's turned out worse simply because of the injuries. But he's another one that could be gone.
Well, yeah, and that's a huge one that I was actually talking about with a couple of people on Twitter over the last couple of days. You know, when Wood was placed on IR, obviously the tweets came out and the articles came out from everybody and their brother that, you know, has Woodley played his last, you know, game in Pittsburgh. And it's not as far-fetched of a thought to actually cut him because, like you said, I mean, this can, you know, take one massive cap hit and then be done with it or spread it out over 2 years if they choose to not bring him back. And, you know, when you look at his contract, it was a six-year, $61.5 million deal. So in 2014, so next year, he's going to count $13.5 million against the cap. I mean, you know, assuming they would bring him back and not restructure at this point. And then in 2015, it's $14 million. And then in 2016, it drops back down to almost $12 million. So it does come a massive restructure because, you know, they're going to have to free up as much of that money as they possibly can. So he'll be a prime candidate, as would Ben or anybody else that always restructures who has big deals. So,
yeah.
You know, but
they'll restructure Ben. I mean, they've typically done that with with quarterbacks 2 years left on their deal. That seems to be like it's going to happen. And Woodley, you know, you don't want to restructure him simply because you don't want to add years onto this for a guy that's injury prone. And so I think they're just going to try to cut their losses the best they can. And then, of course, the ultimate question becomes, well, how much money is Jason Worlds going to want? And can the Steelers even come close to affording it? So you could look at a situation where I really think what's going to happen is they will hold on to Woodley through the offseason. They'll see what the demands of Jason World and his agent are going to be, and if it works, great. And if it doesn't, then they'll have to consider keeping Woodley on. Otherwise, they'll cut him at June 1st. So there's a lot of cat and mouse that's going to be going on between the end of this season and certainly the draft and free agency and everything else.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I certainly would not expect, Colbert, and Tomlin to cut Woodley before June 1st simply because you're not sure, you want to see what you're going to get through the draft. You want to see how fast you can possibly sign Worlds and maybe get him signed, if they're going to get him signed before he hits the market too long and, takes too many offers. But the guy's going to want to shop himself around. I mean, you know that. He's going to want to take some offers, but maybe he's the type of guy who would give the Steelers a hometown discount. I'm guessing right now he's going to be looking at maybe like a $30 million contract, something like that, maybe 40. Nothing ridiculous in like the 50 or 60 because he's not that good. I mean, he had one good season. That's great. But I think, the Steelers will probably offer him somewhere around 30. I would guess between 30 and 40. That's just my 2 cents. I have no basis for that other than my own intelligence or lack thereof.
Yeah, I don't know. I something tells me it might not be as much as that just simply because you've got that 3-year history of tape on him that's not really good. And I got to tell you, I like Worlds. I like what he's done. I appreciate and respect the work that he's put in and how much better he's gotten. But especially with looking at the big contract Woodley got and then what's happened since, I've got this concern that if you pay him, is the hunger going to be there? And he wouldn't be the first guy that got a big contract and then just set it on cruise control from there. And I don't know how he can prove it otherwise, but that's my concern with him. And I think the Steelers probably have a similar concern.
Oh, absolutely, and you're right. And I mean, I've been a guy who's bashed Worlds 9 ways to Sunday since he came here, is not being able to do anything consistently because he's always hurt, or he wasn't able to set the edge, or whatever the case may be. This year, he's playing about as good as you can possibly imagine, especially considering that he's the main guy because Woodley's been hurt so often. So that maybe gives me some hope, but at the same time, is it just playing for a contract? You're right, and then he gets hurt again, or the hunger goes away, and then we're left with a $30 million guy who can't play football again. So I don't know, but I think Woodley here, I mean, the Steelers always do things differently than what we think they're going to, but it would not shock me to see them cut their losses with him if they think that Worlds is going to be the guy and if they think that Jarvis Jones can step up his game. I don't know about you, but when we drafted him in this past offseason, I loved the pick, but I knew he wasn't going to be a lights out, 10, 15 sack guy in his first year. I think he needed to get some more. He needs to learn how to play with leverage and be able to get away from the blocks and use, the speed that he has and learn some more moves because you can't just run by everybody in the NFL.
Well, Tomlin, I think, flat out said it yesterday in the news conference. He said that we typically expect our outside linebackers, when they're rookies, to come in, and they're going to need to immediately add strength 12 months, and I think you'll definitely see him, I'm going to guess, maybe 15 pounds heavier next year, give or take, and if talk about leverage, that's something he really should be learning from Worlds, because that's an area where he really improved and in terms of getting his hips down and being able to stifle up blocks and hold the line. I was looking offense this past draft, but if you were going to get a defensive guy, he certainly wasn't a bad choice. I was hoping for 6 or 7 sacks this year, maybe some turnovers caused, and certainly so for me, he's been a little disappointment there. But he's played hard. He's played well on special teams. I haven't seen any quit in the guy. I don't see any negativity. I don't see anything written badly. He says all the right things. He seems to just be what he needs to be doing, and in some ways we probably should say that he has had a good year because, I mean, how many other outside linebackers have come into the Dick LeBeau system and played this much their first year? I don't think it's too many, so maybe he's ahead of the game. We can only hope.
Well, you're right. And I mean, part of that has been injuries to the point where he's been forced in there. Part of it is, the guy's first, let's see what he can do. With him, he's not going to get any better by sitting there learning. I mean, you're right. I mean, Worlds can each teach him a lot. Woodley can teach him a lot. Obviously, he's been learning from all the linebackers. You know, maybe he's a guy that ends up sliding in the middle at some point. You know, you never know what happens next year, you know, if Foote decides to come back or if they bring him back, assuming he's healed up. I mean, there's lots of factors, but the Steelers' pass rush is going to be a monster concern this offseason with both outside guys. You know, and then, you know, even if you nail down the starters, then you got to worry about depth and who's going to be able to be healthy and come in and who are they going to draft. I mean, this is a draft coming up, which, and I'm not going to get into this anymore than just to say this now, that the Steelers really need to hit on every freaking draft pick that they possibly can this year. I mean, I say that all the time, but based on the way that we're losing players and the defense is old and, you know, it's going to need to be replenished here, they really cannot afford to miss on draft picks. I don't care what. But I'm going to let it go at that because we got season over. So just to go back to that Cincy game a little bit, did you get the same sense that I did, and I know you did because I saw your tweet, that somewhere during that game were smiling from ear to ear?
I you cut out on me a little bit. Who was smiling ear to ear?
Hines Ward, dude.
Yeah, you know, and he was smiling probably for a couple of reasons, obviously because of the extremely hard block by, or not, yeah, block by Garvin on Antonio Brown's punt return for touchdown. And then, of course, he's probably smiling even more because he knew Garvin was going to get fined. sure as shit, he gets fined $25,000 today. And I kind of laughed. I think it was DeMarcus Van Dyke, one of the DBs, he tweeted out something about, you know, Terrence is playing for free this week. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, this is a guy making a few hundred thousand dollars, and you know, and they're going to nail him $25,000 for a play that happens almost every week, and for something that wasn't even flagged. And here we go again with this not even flagged, but yet it's fined by the league office, and we hear the official gets in trouble because he didn't call it. But yet, I mean, for all we know, they're laughing at the rest of us. This was a clean block, and people have said, "Oh, he lined him up. He did this. He did that." It's football, okay? If the punter can tackle, if the punter can do other things, then he is fair game. You know, one of the guys I was chatting with on Twitter, he sent, he put out a video of the Colts punter, what's his name, Pat McAfee, just leveling the punt returner from Denver several weeks ago. You know, was there a flag called on him for you know, a vicious headshot? No, of course not, because he's the punter. You know, it's just asinine the way the league is dealing with this stuff. And I feel for Terrence Garvin because he doesn't deserve it. Tomlin even said in the press conference, he said he did what he was coached to do, although he'll be fined for it. Yeah, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, you're right. It makes no sense at all. And you're right. I mean, he's a guy who is not making much money. So, you know, I mean, $25,000 is not just chump change to you know, a backup, you know, a special teams player. So, you know, and obviously, you know, when you saw it, and of course, you know, for anybody who doesn't remember, which if you're a Steeler fan, I'm sure you do, when Hines Ward just completely blew up Keith Rivers of the Bengals and broke his jaw. And, of course, the punter for the Bengals has his jaw broken on a similar-looking type of block. But, you know, I mean, I saw some Bengal fans going, oh, he lined him up. It was intentional. He wanted to hurt him. I'm like, just get over yourself. I mean, it was a special teams play. The punter can tackle, then the punter can get hit. There's none of this defenseless crap. You know, I mean, obviously the punter was in the way to try and tackle Antonio Brown, so of course he needs to get blocked. So, you know, if Garvin goes low, well then he's trying to take out his knees. If he goes high, well he's trying to knock his head off. So it's the thing we go through all the time with this, where the NFL has turned this into a league where the players just don't know what to do. So, you know, you're going to block the way you've been taught to block, and then you're going to get fined and deal with it and move on. So, but, I mean, honestly, when I saw that hit, obviously everybody knew he was going to get fined, but it was just a hellacious hit to watch. I loved it. I've watched it 100 times since.
Yeah, and you know, no, you hope the guy's okay. I mean, you don't want to see anybody hurt, let alone the broken jaw, and they say he's got a couple cracked vertebrae, too. I mean, you know, but here's my question. What the hell was he doing that far up in the coverage anyway? He's the punter. He's the last man. He's the safety man. Unless they had some other kind of call on that another of the other 10 players was the guy that was supposed to be the last hope of making a tackle. He had no business even being up there. And I don't get it, and I'm sorry. It's I continue to say it's football. There's 11 guys on each side. Every single guy knows the rules. Every single guy knows what the expectations are. If the punters and the kickers are going to be allowed to to do A, B, and C, then they can be blocked too. And God darn it, I mean, this league is just, it is. It's turning in to just mush, and it's going to be unwatchable before too long, except by the fantasy football players who want to see 65 to 60 games every week.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I mean, this is why I love watching the NFL, because I love watching hits like this. I've always been a defensive guy. You know, I love seeing Clark used to take the big hits and Troy make the big hits. And that's something, obviously, you don't see as much now. When you do, I mean, it takes the wind out of your sails, because you know they're going to get fined even if they aren't flagged. So it just, it's ridiculous to me who they can label defenseless and who they can't. It pisses me off watching this game, because I can see the game I love is going downhill. And my God, if we get on this rant anymore, we're going to be here all night again. But it, just for the record, Terrence Garvin has a base salary of $405,000 this year, just so everybody knows, just in case you were curious. He's an inside linebacker, 22-year-old out of West Virginia, backup, obviously. So there's your little bit of trivia. He makes $400,000 for 2013.
Yeah, so in other words, that's just wrong.
It is. I mean, $25,000 for that. I mean, honest to God, seriously. I mean, that's just, well, you know, whatever. It's just, it's stupid, and we can't stand it. And just, it makes our game just watered down. You know, peewee football. I don't even know what to call it. But in any event, moving on right now, and then we'll start to wrap this up here soon. So the Steelers got a couple of games left. They're heading to historic Lambeau Field in December, and you know the Vince Lombardi, this and that. Not sure yet if Aaron Rodgers is coming back. He has not been cleared to play, although he's been practicing the last couple of weeks and so far this week. So Tomlin said he doesn't care who's going to start. They're going to prepare based on the way that they've seen the Packers play, et cetera, et cetera. So if I'm the Steelers, I like my chances better with Aaron Rodgers on the sideline for any number of reasons, regardless of where we're playing. But do you see the Steelers winning these last two games, or splitting them, or losing both?
I do see splitting. I have a hard time seeing them going into Lambeau. And, of course, Lambeau is like Heinz Field to a certain extent. It's not, you know, what it once was in terms of you're not going to come into our place and win. You know, teams come to Heinz Field now and win a lot more than they ever did. And certainly the mystique of Lambeau has worn off a little bit too. They've lost some home playoff games in the past and are easily beatable. You know, their defense gives up a lot of yards. They give up a lot of passing yards. And, I think part of the problem is going to be, regardless of who's a quarterback for the Packers, is just the offensive balance they have right now with Eddie Lacy running the ball very well. And then Flynn obviously looks a lot more comfortable in the offense as he did last week, especially in the second half against Dallas. So it's going to be one of those games where we're going to have to create some turnovers, get some short fields if we really do expect to win, because I expect them to challenge us about as well as we've been challenged in several weeks, maybe even going back to New England. And I'm not saying that Flynn is Tom Brady or their receiving crew is good as New England's necessarily. It's just that I think they're going to do things to move the ball down the field, which is the complete opposite of what Cincinnati did last week, and I'm still scratching my head over that. it's a great environment there, and I think they have a chance, as good as anybody, but I think they'll probably drop this one and then come home and beat Cleveland. And there's your, what would that be, 8-8 or 7-9?
8-8. 8-8.
You just got to see what happens. I mean, it's the NFL. You just don't know anymore. And, certainly I think Le'Veon Bell will be fired up to play and prove that he's a big-time back. And, it's just going to be matchups, as it always is, and right now the weather doesn't look terrible other than it just being cold. It doesn't look like any snow or anything, so, who knows? I don't.
Honestly, you're right. The mystique of Lambeau in December is long gone, because there's too many things that have happened over the last 5-7 years to really, say that, you can't go in and win in the snow in Wisconsin in December anymore. I mean, people have done it, the same with Heinz Field. But you're right. I think the Steelers are going to split. I would love to see them finish out the year strong and at least finish 8-8, but I'm kind of seeing them finishing like a 7-9 if they do split. But you know, I mean, Green Bay did have that come from behind win to beat Dallas last week, so I'm sure they're fired up. You know, they have that tie on their record, which really is just a killer, I guess, you know, for any kind of playoff hopes. Honestly, I've not done my research. I don't know how far Green Bay is in the NFC playoff hunt, because I just don't pay attention to the NFC.
It's simple for them. The wild cards from that conference are not coming out of the NFC North. So whoever wins the division, that's it. And right now, the Bears have a game up on the Lions, but the Lions own the tiebreaker with the Bears, and then if Green Bay wins two, then they get it. So it's really just win and you're in kind of a thing for those two teams, because the Bears and the Packers play the last game of the year. So it'll be interesting. I mean, this is the first time the teams have played since Super Bowl 45, and last time they hooked up in the regular season was that just epic game in Pittsburgh where Mike Wallace, of all people, caught the winning touchdown with no time left. So hopefully we'll see something like that this week.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you knew that, because I'm not sure I knew that at all. All I knew was I thought they were still in it, but I had no idea. I knew the Lions had blown their chances several times over the last month.
They're
to really solve that.
Yeah,
division.
They're still in it, but they definitely need to win two, and now they need just a little bit of help too. But yeah, the playoff situation in the NFC is a little easier to figure out than it is in the AFC, because there's so many bad teams in our conference.
I hear that. Well, I'm glad you knew that. So that is your NFC playoff stat for the day, ladies and gentlemen.
Courtesy of Steel Dad. For my wall today.
Hell yeah, there you go. Oh, so before we wrap it up, you're going to be at that game, right?
I am. I will be over at Lambeau Field on Sunday. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law are big Packer fans, and we're able to. Well, you know, it's worse. They're not like Ravens or Browns fans. I mean, you know, everything I've been told, I keep running into people that say, oh, you're going to love it. The people up there, they just love having fans from other teams come in, and it's kind of a party atmosphere. It's fun. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to it, and there's really not a bad seat in the house. We're about halfway down, and I think on one of the 20-yard lines. And I'll be walking around with my Steel City Blitz cards. I'll hand out some cards when I see Steeler fans and stuff. So, you know, if you listen to the show and you're going to be in Green Bay and you get handed a Steel City Blitz card, that's me. So stop by, say hello or whatever. And I have never been there before. This is the first time for me. And obviously I'm a Steelers fan, but, you know, I'm a football fan too. And going to Lambeau is, you know, it's one of those bucket list things. And so I'm glad I can scratch it off and at the same time do it while my team's there too. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Hell yeah, man. We'll be sure and take some pictures, and I'll look for you on TV there. Because
I'll probably be the guy sitting between the one Steeler fan between two Packer fans, and probably have beer dumped over me every 20 minutes. I don't know.
Wouldn't have it any other way, dude.
I know it.
Awesome. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up here, but we'll be back next week so Mark can give us his wrap-up and how, you know, regardless of how the game is, he can give us his his 2 cents or on how the experience was at Lambeau. So be sure and take some pictures too, man.
I will take pictures, and I will make sure that I sample numerous styles of bratwurst that they'll be grilling up there. And I mean, who knows how many different varieties of beer up there. I mean, it's the beer capital of the world up there. So it should be a good time, and I'll have pictures and hopefully none that are incriminating.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah, that's true. That might be too tame.
There you go. All right, everyone, that's it for this week, but be sure and tune in next week so you can hear Mark's epic monologue of how the Steeler Nation handles the Lambeau Field experience. So for Mark, I am Matt. Thanks for listening to The Blitz, presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. We will see you next time. Thanks for listening to The Blitz, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan podcast presented by SteelCityBlitz.com. Be sure and follow Mark on Twitter at SteelDad and Matt at Retro Rock City. If you'd like to be on the show or submit a question for us to discuss, just drop us a line on the website, www.steelcityblitz.com, and use the Contact Us link on the top right of the page, or you can just drop us a tweet. Steel City Blitz is an independent fan site not affiliated with the Pittsburgh Steelers or the National Football League. Our opinions are our own.